The Things They Carried, Disc 6.
Creepy, Azar said. Wet pants and goosebumps. He held a beer out to me, but I shook my head. We sat in the dim light of my hooch, boots off, listening to Mary Hopkins on my tape deck. What next? Wait, I said. Sure, I mean, shut up and listen. That high, elegant voice. Someday, when the war was over, I'd go to London and ask Mary Hopkins to marry me. That's another thing Nam does to you. It turns you sentimental. It makes you want to hook up with girls like Mary Hopkins. You learn, finally, that you'll die, and so you try to hang on to your own life, that gentle, naive kid you used to be. But then after a while, the sentiment takes over, and the sadness. Because you know for a fact that you can't ever bring any of it back again. You just can't. Those were the days, she sang. Azar switched off the tape. Shit, man, he said. Don't you got music? And now, finally, the moon was out. We slipped back to our positions and went to work again with the ropes, louder now, more insistent. Starlight sparkled in the barbed wire, and there were curious reflections and layerings of shadow, and the big white moon added resonance. There was no wind. The night was absolute. Slowly, we dragged the ammo cans closer to Bobby Jorgensen's bunker, and this, plus the moon, gave a sense of approaching peril, the slow, belly-down crawl of evil. At 0300 hours, Azar set off the first trip flare. There was a light popping noise, then a sizzle out in front of Bunker 6. The night seemed to snap itself in half. The white flare burned 10 paces from the bunker. I fired off 3 more flares, and it was instant daylight. Then Jorgensen moved. He made a short, low cry. Not even a cry, really, just a short, lung and throat bark. And there was a blurred sequence as he lunged sideways and rolled toward a heap of sandbags and crouched there and hugged his rifle and waited. There, I whispered. Now you know. I could read his mind. I was there with him. Together we understood what terror was. You're not human anymore. You're a shadow. You slip out of your own skin like molting, shedding your own history and your own future, leaving behind everything you ever were or wanted or believed in. You know you're about to die and it's not a movie and you aren't a hero and all you can do is whimper and wait. This, now, was something we shared. I felt close to him. It wasn't compassion, just closeness. His silhouette was framed like a cardboard cutout against the burning flares. In the dark outside my hooch, even though I bent toward him almost nose to nose, all I could see were the glossy whites of Azar's eyes. Enough, I said. Oh, sure, seriously. Azar gave me a small, thin smile. Serious? He said. That's way too serious for me. I'm your basic fun lover. When he smiled again, I knew it was hopeless, but I tried anyway. I told him the score was even. We'd made our point, I said. No need to rub it in. Azar stared at me. Poor, poor boy, he said. The rest was inflection and white eyes.